in life for free. But you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. Time out. She's AV. Angelica Vasenko on the board. SP futures up 14. NASDAQ futures up 104. It's a whole percent. Dow futures up 77 as we try and bounce back from yesterday's sell-off, because we can't be down two days in a row. That's not what the government wants. So that's last thing they want is the stock market going down here. I'm sure it probably won't happen. Kevin, we got you, bud. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. It's Friday. What could be wrong?
Well, here's one thing that's wrong.
Other than the AC breaking down yesterday.
That would do that.
They'll be here this morning to put the new condenser in.
There you go. British Air retired its entire fleet of Boeing 747 jets. I was hoping to get over to Europe at some point and fly British Air just so I could ride on one of those one more time, Kevin. No, I won't be able to do that.
Well, hey, you know what? You got to bear your little crosses wherever necessary in life.
Well, they're all retiring all these entire fleet of jets. Yet the new one that they're all looking for doesn't fly yet, so I don't know. But I was looking yesterday at the Delta.
As long as it flies before you get on it, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And I mean as long as it flies.
Yes. It's very, very, very strange what we're seeing in these airlines, what we're seeing in the market, what we're seeing with people talking. And I don't know, Kevin. Sometimes I always have a big spread between what I consider to be the talking heads and so forth, and the, shall we say, what's really kind of going on. I mean, I don't know. They can talk all they want about this, how these numbers are bouncing back with the retail sales numbers yesterday. But Kevin, it's not happening. I mean, we're back to what, 24% of the normal airline traffic. I mean, that's not very much, bud.
Well, our retail sales number is going to go up. Yeah, to some degree, they will, for a few reasons. One is we gave people a ton of money to spend.
Yep.
So that'll do it. And the other thing is, yeah, still have to eat. You still need clothing, you know, all of those kinds of things. So, put a little extra money in my pocket, guess where it's going to go? Into retail sales.
Well, yeah, and I think...
I'm not complaining. It's a good thing that retail sales are up. That's at least one area where we might, be able to see some sustained employment for people. But it is kind of a hit yourself on the forehead and say duh moment when you make that observation.
Well, plus yesterday I was watching some people. Obviously, I watch the news all day long because that's what I do for my clients. I don't watch the news for them. I watch the news so I can trade more effectively for them. Somewhat have to keep pace with the stuff as bad as it can be, Kevin Shaw. Is that fair? And it's funny. You talk about the people on there, and I'm not, disparaging companies or anything like that, but yeah, I am, because I'm going to disparage them in a minute here, but, Do some of these people have any kind of a view of what the rest of the world is like, or do they just wander from school into some job at some money place, especially the younger people, and I'm going to take a shot, the very attractive young ladies? It's not that they're not smart. They are. Not that they don't deserve the job, but of course, if they are attractive, that's who the firm has on TV, right? You're not going to put me on there as your face guy. I mean, maybe there was one time you might do it, but you're not going to do it anymore. I mean...
The classic face made for radio, huh?
Yes, yes. Well, but I mean, that's what you do. If I had a whole firm of somebody and I had equally talented people, I'm going to get either the best-looking guy or the best-looking lady, and they're going to be the ones that are on TV representing my company. And I know that's unfair to say, but the last thing I'm going to do is put somebody who hasn't had a bath in 2 days, doesn't know how to dress, they're not going to be my face on TV. I'm sorry. You know, they could be brilliant, and I'm not going to fire them, but I mean, the world is...
And what's going to happen even if you're not, even if it's not a person who is particularly attractive, what you still are going to have is a lot of coaching on how you dress and how, all of the, everything that's involved in making a good impression. So, yeah, we're going to gussy people up anyway.
Can I add something?
Sure.
So, yeah, I saw one article that they were saying that attractive people are more successful... because people are more likely to trust attractive people. So that's why I think Well, you see a lot of attractive people on TV.
Put it another way, AV. Anytime you interview, you're selling yourself.
Yes.
Right? So, I mean, and I never could, as much as I love drilling Lou, I've never been able to figure out, Kevin, and this is a legitimate question. This isn't politically incorrect. This and everything. If you interview somebody, right, for a regular job, I mean, and to me, I could care less if you're tall, short, fat, ugly. I don't care. I mean, it doesn't matter to me, and I absolutely don't care what race you are. I don't care anything. I never did, but I also know that if I was interviewing somebody for a role in some huge film where they got to wear either the guy's got to run around in a bathing suit or the lady's got to wear a bikini, I'm not going to hire some fatso. I'm just not going. I mean, it's just the role. That's not the role. And I never could figure out from Lou when that ends. I mean, when is the break between I have to interview everybody and make sure that everything is in clean, and I'm not going to have a Arnold Schwarzenegger movie with me as the muscle man. I mean, that movie doesn't hunt. I mean,
in the movies is a special world because there's nothing that reflects reality. But in the business world, there's actually a lot of research into who gets hired and how people get hired. One of the things they know is that very often, in fact, most often, the decision whether you want to hire somebody is made in the opening minutes of an interview.
Oh, absolutely.
And after that, it becomes strictly a question of, whether you're going to confirm that or whether the person is going to, disqualify him or herself.
Put it another way, you only get one chance to make a first impression.
That is another way to put it. But ultimately the point there is that if people are attracted to you, if people warm to you, now you may not be especially attractive, but if you have that great outgoing
right.
personality and that winning smile, et cetera, and if you do all of that, then that may carry the day for you. But the process is actually pretty interesting to see because, there are places where they try to filter out that bias, and they do that by saying you're going to work on a script of questions and, everybody's going to get the exact same chance to, as opposed to the inexact same chance, by
yep.
the way, but the same chance to answer each question as well as any of the other candidates. There's ways people try to filter around that so that they get the better people, but it doesn't matter. In the end, it's how you what's going to drive the decision, and once you've made that first impression that you mentioned, it's all about confirmation bias. After that, you're either confirming it or something happens where you go, oh, too bad. I really wanted to hire this guy. I like him, but he's an idiot.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, it's. And a lot of times people, even though they say they don't, they bail on their selection process. When I say they bail, that's why you hire the guy from Harvard. Not because you think he's any smarter or any better than the guy from John Marshall. In fact, the guy from John Marshall could have three jobs on the side and be a self-made man, and he just did this to confirm how good he was all along, or just wanted another. Yet, for two reasons, you're going to hire the guy from Harvard. One is, you can always fall back on the Harvard selection process and say he must be good because he got in Harvard. And you'll fall back on, well, I can bill him out the first year more than I can the guy, John Marshall, even if the guy's an idiot or she's an idiot. Because I know a couple people that happened to, that they hired somebody from Harvard and they were idiots. and they couldn't wait to get rid of them. But it's, the selection process is really just that. I mean, you see it in the corporate world all the time. I'm a board member. I hired Goldman Sachs. We paid them four times more than we paid anybody else. How could I have made a mistake? I hired the best and I paid the most money. Yeah, but they did a horse bleep job. Doesn't matter. I hired the best and paid the most money. So it doesn't come down on me. It may be them or something, but it sure as hell isn't me because, that's why it's very difficult to be an up and coming firm. Because people will say, even if you're the best, you hire the, and the same thing happened to, in a weird, convoluted way, happened to Michelle Obama and Barack Obama when they put out to her small firm, the people who were doing the tech work on the, and paid them a lot of money for the Obamacare. Now, whether they did it because they were connected to her or not, it was a, that's politically, that's the way I would guess it. But if they would have gone out and just picked the most expensive big firm in the country and done it, then nobody would ever bitch at them. Now, they did it for other reasons, probably, and I would bitch at them just as well. But what I'm saying is, any small, I mean, if you have a big company and you decide, I'm not going to get the biggest accounting firm, the highest money to do our audit, and I know these guys over here have used some other businesses, they're really good, I'll bring them in. If anything happens, it's on you, Kevin. But if it's the big guy that you're shoving money in, and I never could figure out exactly where the line was there, where you could give an up-and-coming guy a break, or an accounting firm that's out of the big four or whatever it is, but it's totally on you. They look at you like you got four heads.
And those well, in most of the world, because you're right, you're gonna get a major accounting firm for any major corporation, but and that's going to be true in a lot of purchasing processes. Although I think that's changing. I think people are starting to get a grip on how they can manage their own supply chains better, but via purchasing. But the in most businesses, in the smaller business, medium-sized business, it really becomes a who do I know, like, and trust type of decision process. And, you know, some it's strictly who's going to give me the lowest cost for what I want done. But I think more businesses now than ever before realize that there is some total cost of doing business with somebody that involves things like, you know, delivering on time, canceled orders, you know, all of that, that it's more, there's more to the equation, or more to the cost than actually what the bill says at the end of the month. So you run into a fair amount of that, but it really does get down to relationships, and it takes a while for anybody to crack into process for becoming a supplier. But when you do, and then you continue to deliver, you've preempted anybody else from getting in there.
Well, I've noticed, Kevin, that in some of the legal stuff, and then we're going to go back to where I started this conversation, and some of the legal stuff, when I've done my expert witness testimony, mm-hmm. it's the arbitrators, and I think some judges, although that's not my area of expertise, the arbitrators absolutely defer to the bigger firms. They are absolutely intimidated by them, and you're lost in that. I'm not going to say they're going to rig a decision, but simple stuff like discovery requests. If you're a big firm, you just stick your middle finger up at them, and you don't get the right stuff, and then the other side will say, hey, they didn't deliver what they were said they were going to deliver. Then they come back and say, we gave you a million pages of something. Yeah, it might be everything they gave you is useless, and they gave you four copies of everything. I mean, they know how to play this game. They can overwhelm. And at the end of the day, you never get what you want to get. Even though they'll have two or three orders from the arbitrators, no, for sure, you got to bring the stuff. They finally just get tired of it. They defer to the big firm, and they just don't bring it. But a small lawyer would never get away with that, ever. But they do get to intimidate. I'm sure it's the same way with judges. You know, you go back to the Paul Newman movie, The Verdict. You know, and we need to root a lot of that stuff out of here, right? I want to get back to what I was talking about earlier, Kevin, about how I don't think this economy is getting back as way people think it is. And the thing that's horrifying to me is now the people that have somehow found a way to hunker down in the new world. Well, let's put everything off to September. Nah, September don't look so good. You know, let's make it October. Let's make it. This is exactly the opposite. Kevin, you and I talked about this in March. They not only, if you and I have a hot dog stand, AV's with us, and we say, all right, we'll be closed for 60 days. We're draining 20 grand a month. We'll put in 20. Okay, we're good to go on whatever, July 1st. Make it August. Make it September. Now at the end of the day, we not only lost our hot dog stand, we lost all our savings too. Where if you'd have told me in the beginning, I'm not open for 2 years, I just would have walked. And you know who's getting this right stuck up the behind more than anybody else? The federal government. They were told by governors and presidents and Fauci and all these other people that, you know, this is going to be a 15-day, 30-day, and they said, okay, it's not going to be 30, let's double it. Let's make it 75 days. Let's carry everybody to the end of June. Kevin, we're no further along. Instead, the message is so far, is so misinterpreted or mis-said or whatever, that now people are saying, if I don't have a 100% chance of going back to war without getting this thing. Meanwhile, I mean, I was in an argument with some people the other day, and, you know, these young kids, why, I said, first of all, they're not even sick. I was on yesterday with Joan Esposito, and Joan's terrific, and she goes, I said, Joan, look at it this way. They're not even sick. I mean, we were 25 once. They're not sick, and oh, by the way, in 2 weeks you don't have to worry about them anymore. They're over it, and they've had antibodies. Yeah, but what about, like, other people they might infect? Because once you go down that road, that could be a cold. Obviously, if it's leprosy or it's bubonic plague, you got to do what you got to do to keep. But this isn't. I mean, I'm glad it isn't. I mean, I'm happily glad it isn't that we're not all dead, for God's sake. But I mean, as the news comes out, as we learn, you got to change your tune. There's going to come a time when people are going to have to go back to school with the chance that somebody walks home with it. It's not going to, but we hope the chance is 20% and not 80, but it's not going to be zero. And somebody somewhere is going to have to say, look, when we get down to a 10 or 20% chance, we're just going to have to run with it. You know, and I don't know who that person is, Kevin, and I don't know how, as splintered as we are as a society, as this is coming down on political lines and everything else, then there's some people that are dying to shut bars on people without any kind of proof that that's the place that, you know, I mean, and the off chance, I don't see any sort of a mechanism here where we're going to be go back to, I'll use the term normal, at any time. I mean, a teachers union 2 years from now is going to say, unless it's 100% chance, or some 75-year-old, you know, I make the guy way older than me, some 75-year-old dude's going to say, I'm not teaching at Duke or Notre Dame if there's a chance I might get it. Well, fine, retire, you old fossil face. At some point, we're going to have to make that statement, as ugly as it is, Kevin. And I don't see anybody around that can make it. Do you?
Well, and we've always had that chance. I could go into a classroom tomorrow and be close to a student with hepatitis or something like that before it was active. Now, is it perhaps more likely with COVID-19? Sure. Is it manageable? Yeah, I mean, it isn't, you know, we go back to what was done in Sweden where, you know, they said we're going to protect the vulnerable population and then leave everybody else to their judgment. And people are going to do things that everybody considers meat-headed. Can't help it. You know, if we're going to try and legislate against meat-headedness, we're really screwed.
But that's where we're going. That's right where we're going, though, Kevin. That's right where we're going. Because in the last 15 conversations, I'll say, you know, you have to trust people to use their own common sense. We can't trust people to use their common sense. We have to make sure. So once you go down that road, story of the three fat guys at the Bear game when it's 5 below 0 to take their shirts off. Okay, their mom is going to say, this is not a very good idea, son. And other people are going to say, those guys are idiots. Say what you want, but you can't say that you can't do it. You get the right to be a knothead every once in a while, as long as you don't kill anybody. Right? I mean, you're not going to kill anybody by taking your... Well, it might be ugly, but still, you're not going to kill anybody by
You might burn some eyes.
Yeah, you might. but I mean, if you do that, why would anybody play golf? You might get hit head with the ball, right? And what good does it do you? It's not that great of an exercise. Why would it? You certainly would close every skydiving place, right? Why would anybody do something that stupid? Why would anybody ever water ski when there's a chance you could drown? And what do you get out of water? I mean, when you start going down that road and make decisions for other people, why would you let anybody kayak down a river? Well, the only thing can happen there is bad. I mean, there's a million things. You'd never let anybody play football, basketball. You could break an ankle. I mean, right? All the stuff I did when I was young,
you
I can't
take your eye out.
Yeah, you go, okay, you can do this, you can do that.
I mean, your eye out, kid.
Well, I mean, I was on with Joan yesterday, and she said, well, you know, there's a possibility. I said, you know, Joan, if you don't mind, I said, you're talking about somebody who says the distance is 6 feet, now it can stay in the air, and what about elevators? I said, I'll do you one better. There's a guy who is a fluid analyst. They do air testing of car bodies and things. I said, this guy wrote that it's a possibility. I said that you're jogging along the right front and you're jogging pretty fast and the wind's in your face and you sneezed or coughed and this thing got caught in the wind and there's some poor guy jogging 20 yards behind you. It's very possible that he could walk through the wind coming his way and a minuscule droplet lands on his shirt. Okay, there's absolutely that chance. Yet, now does that mean it lands right in the middle of his eye? Does that mean that it's a big enough droplet that it's going to get from his eye and he's going to be sick before he's done with his run? I said there's the possibility and then there's the probability. And somewhere along the line, somebody has to make the call between the possibility and the probability. I mean, I remember years ago when I first came downtown, some poor guy was walking to the Wabash and Adams L stop. It was a windy night and some wind blows a window out of the CNA building, which always had issues with their windows. Thing comes down and lands right on his neck and like cuts the top of his body off. All right? I don't want to be that guy. I'm glad I didn't know him. I'm sure glad it wasn't a family member or a friend. Is there a possibility every time you walk out the door something that like that happened or an asteroid hitting you right in the head? Yes. Is there a probability? Yeah, probability is no. And everybody who does
these... And we behave accordingly.
We behave accordingly. Most people. Although I will say this, there is craziness when you do stuff to society. I think we need to do something in these expressways. There was, this morning, AV will give the report, multiple fatalities and car crashes on the Ryan this morning. Kevin, we're talking about you can't go down the thing without somebody going by at 120 miles an hour. I mean, it is totally out of control. I mean,
just thinking back, it seems like it was always that way.
It's where you will not find a policeman. Now everybody knows there's nobody there. But it's crazed. It's absolutely crazed.
Yeah, but I just remember that always being a racetrack because it's just so wide and you can, you know, there's so much room to weave that you just put it down and move.
I'm going to say I used to go down there at 65 and people went by me. Now I'm doing 80 and people are going by me.
Wow.
It's way worse. Anyway, two things. I got a thing here from, our buddy, David Parks, and he was, I brought this up a couple times. I mean, I think John's going to call in and talk to us about money that goes back and forth from federal governments to states. Because I've been in a thing with one of my clients, one of our good listeners, Mike Kanye, about the money that comes back and forth, like the governors. And I mentioned it yesterday, and Maddie, of course, was all over me regarding the money that the Illinois and some of the states that would be bouncing their unemployment checks are getting from the federal government. And Maddie says, that's our money. Why should he have to be nice to Trump? I said, I'm not so sure that I don't know if there's a, quote, a rainy day pool of this kind of thing or whether it's a loan or whether the state comes up with a bond issue and the Fed buys it. I mean, I have no idea where that money comes from. I mean, maybe there's a congressional, I'll use the term cesspool of money that they can... But I don't know if the Fed can just write that check without something. Anyway, I brought up on many occasions that when people like Jay and Lori and people do these idiotic things, like close businesses that don't need to be closed and everybody has to buy stuff from Amazon, and I know a million people who love Amazon. Isn't it interesting, Kevin, that if you use a place and you love the place, if you cite things that are bad about it, people will not listen to you because they don't want to hear it. And when I got the article yesterday from, I sent it out about the Muslim group in the concentration camps in China and how they're working in Nike factories and factories that benefit. If you told somebody that about Nike, they'd close their ears and start humming like you used to with your mother. With your hands on you. I don't know if you ever did that, but I did that. It didn't work out too well most times, but I mean.
Yeah, you saw I don't know if you had a chance to watch the video I sent you about Nike.
Oh, no, I did not see it yet. I will.
Yeah, it's a guy who was an assistant soccer coach at St. John's was criticizing Nike when St. John's had a Nike contract, and so he was told to either shut up or resign, so he resigned, and then he and a friend of his, a woman friend of his, went to Indonesia, wherever, whatever it is that Nike has a factory, and lived and worked with the people and the living conditions, and documented the squalor that's involved and what's, you know, what's all behind it. It's the kind of video, and I can tweet it out. It's the kind of video that will make you never buy Nike again.
Well, I mean, but this is not so much of that. But I mean, well, Amazon. If I tell people they still don't charge sales tax on most of this, on half their stuff, I get the biggest arguments on earth. Yet they don't, Kevin. I mean, just look it up. I mean, third-party vendors, they still don't collect. And, oh, by the way, I think they collect from the state. I don't know if they collect from the city and the county, but they might. I'm not a...
Yeah. I mean, I think Amazon, what they execute well, it's a good business in that regard. It is not necessarily what I would call an ethical business. I know we're coming up against break, but, you know, real quickly, one of the things, and you're seeing this messaging coming out of the Trump administration, is that we have not just the tech companies, but especially the tech companies is in their sight, it is that everybody is now so dependent on the Chinese markets that, you know, how are we going to do anything about them without risking the fiscal health of businesses that are so tied to that now.
Well, we've not only offshore.
That's a big issue. It's a big problem we have right now, because how do you take an ethical stand if it's going to chop your business in half?
Well, you also, we'll get into a break here, but stuff like the rare earth metals, the reason why we send it over there is because it's pollution heavy. The offloading the slave labor, and I guess we can shift that to Thailand, but the offloading, the pollution, we don't want that back here. Anyway, Kevin, we got to go to break. S&P futures up 11, Dow futures up 52. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. She's AV on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. SP Futures up $14. The NASDAQ Futures up 94. Dow up 58. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 18.1%. Not much going on in Europe. FTSE up 21.3. Kick around down 18.3. So kind of a mixed bag over there. Nikkei down 73.3%. Shanghai, which had a huge hit yesterday, is only up 4 points by 1%. So no bounce there. Same thing with the Hang Seng. A little bit of a bounce here. Up 118.4%. Those guys were down heavy yesterday on the Chinese numbers. Treasury yields 0.60, so that's down from the 0.65 it's been. Bund minus 0.47. And Japanese hanging in there, positive 0.01. We've got oil down 21 cents, but still above 40.54. Brent down 28 cents, 43.09. Natural gas, 170. RBOB, 122. And we've got gold up $5, 1805, hanging in there over 1800. And we got silver still at a pretty high price here, 1956. Copper, 290, still can't quite make it to $3, but that's, I don't know if that's where it's heading, but it's been trending that way. AV, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Good morning, friends. Happy Friday. It's another beautiful summer morning. Plenty of sunshine during the day. The highest will be 87 and the lowest 74 at night. The heat and humidity will be the big story on Saturday. A cold front will bring a risk of strong storms with gusty winds and heavy rain late Saturday night into Sunday. Sunny and dry in Phoenix, 108 degrees will be the highest of the day, and then the temperature will drop down to 87. Mainly clear at night will be in Phoenix tonight. And if your Friday morning travel takes you into Indiana from the city, you'll definitely want to use the Chicago Skyway. The outbound Dan Ryan remains blocked at 71st following at least 3 crashes with multiple fatalities. Delay build up on Ryan inbound with from 95 up to 71st Street. Brake lights start before 103rd. The crash involving a vehicle that went up into the trees. Yeah, unfortunately, not really good news on Friday today.
No, I mean, I think the guy who planted those trees must have thought they were safe, but wrong-o. Just saying. Kevin, from time to time, I have been mentioning, we started the conversation before the break, that the Amazon situation and some of the upward people just, you know, the Nike situation, but when you say that you can't have a store open to go buy whatever it is you're trying to buy, yeah, you can order it from Amazon. I'll be blunt here. Nobody gave a rat's behind how many people and how close they were in the Amazon facility. Nobody cares if there's two people in the Amazon truck. I don't know if there ever are. Nobody cares. As long as it shows up on your doorstep, it's okay. We don't want people going into bars, but, oh, by the way, we want to carry out food, and we're never going to check how close people are in a kitchen. I've yet once to see a kitchen in an older restaurant that where people are 6 feet apart of you. Ever?
No.
Just saying. So, I mean, but some of the stuff...
Yeah, I was just thinking. When I was giving you the I was thinking of the places I've been, and the answer is no.
Yeah, so some of this is not only kind of questionable leadership, it's also, I'm going to say, really ignorant money-wise, because the place you're shutting down, the Best Buy, is paying an arm and a leg in property taxes. Amazon pays none. None. Actually, you know, they might have a couple of those facilities where they'll do deliveries, two in the city. There's one in Nepal, Kevin, where if you're a Nepal student, I think you can get your stuff delivered to that place and you go pick it up there instead of them trying to muscle it in your dorm or whatever. So there's a few of those places around. So I'm mistaken when I say they pay no property taxes, but they're not the same as a Best Buy. It's not the same as Kevin and Chief's blue jeans store that's closed while Target is selling all the blue jeans in the world they want. But here's a letter here from one of our listeners, David Parks. He's talking about New York, and I don't begin to understand. We need a loose tax guy. The hell's his name, Kevin? Robert
Raiola.
Raiola.
He's great.
Chicago, I don't think we have much of an issue with people commuting to work from Indiana. In other words, Illinois has a state income tax, Indiana. I've never heard of any big problems there. I mean, people get paid here. I should know this, Kevin, but I honestly don't know how that works. But you get paid in Illinois. I assume there's some sort of a deal where you're paying some Illinois tax. You don't just get to run to Indiana and not pay Illinois state income tax if you work here. But yeah, I don't know how that works. We have to get somebody in who does. But I'm sure one of the listeners maybe can send us an article that would. But evidently in New York, it's a big deal. Because a lot of people commute from New Jersey and from Connecticut. And if they're not working, let's say, PTI Securities had a huge, I won't say a building, who the hell want to, well, you'd want to own a building, I guess. If you had big offices in New York, and all of a sudden those people went home to New Jersey and worked from home, I have to believe that we could now pay them out of the Chicago office or something instead of the New York office, right? I don't know how that I'm not a payroll expert, but I'm saying what David is writing us here is that because of the unique way New York is situated, when people go from home, they're not necessarily making those earnings anymore in New York. And it's a huge percentage, a huge chunk of money for New York. I mean, they claim over 5% of the New York population, over 400,000 people, have left since the current coronavirus lockdowns began. I mean, we heard that originally, Kevin, when people were all pissed off mother states when it was real bad in New York. The guys were heading there to Florida and all the other places where they have homes or family or whatever. And a lot of them haven't come back. And the question is, where are they working? Are they still working in New York or not? And
yeah, where is their income tax?
Yeah. And according to the data from the New York Times, it's always interesting that when guys who hate the New York Times the most also quote the New York Times. But I won't say anything bad about David. Anyway, according to the data from the New York Times.
Yeah, poor David. You've got to be nice to him.
I am nice to him. He's the best. The richest neighborhoods in New York City saw an exit of about 40% of the residents. Okay, so that's compared to the lower middle class neighborhoods where fewer than 10% of the. You know what? Lower middle class, where do you go, Kevin? Those are the people that went home with the coronavirus and it worked its way through the family and you hope nobody died. And they weren't counted. But as long as they didn't go near de Blasio, he didn't care. And they stayed out of my neighborhood, and hopefully they didn't die, but if they did, they're going to die anyway. You know, I'm not speaking for the man, he's probably nicer than that, but that's the way it worked out. But it says over 5% of the population is left, and the richest 5% of the population pays over 60% of the income taxes in the city. One of the highest earning New Yorkers pays about as much taxes as 196 median earning New Yorkers and thousands of lower income residents. I mean, these people not only, when you think about a politician, all you think about is total money grubbing that they get paid no matter what happens. And yet their fiscal stupidity through this whole thing is mind-boggling to me. It's absolutely mind-boggling to me. Are they just that incompetent everywhere? I thought at least they were pretty competent when coming to get people's taxes from them.
You would think, but, you know, great mottos of government is, oops, we didn't think it through.
Well, my question is,
honestly, Tom, how much legislation, when we talk about unintended consequences, which is a nice way of saying we didn't think it through.
Right. Well, everything is going to have an unintended consequence, even if you do think it through, but the more you think it through, the less there are, right? I mean,
yeah, the more you can mitigate them.
I guess my brother and I go, mean, I know, I'm not going to say it in here, I know how much the building we're in downtown, it's not a huge building, it's just an older building. I know how much they pay in taxes and how much they used to. I know that some of the days, especially after the riots, we were the only people in the building, the only people here. Now, I don't think people are bailed on them, but I know there's a bar downstairs that pays an appreciable amount of rent that was closed for, you know, 4 months, and now they're open. And I'm going to say, Kevin, I was talking to, stopped there the other night, and one of the ladies was a bartender, and she's almost in tears. And she goes, well, what are we going to do? First, we're liable to close again with this mayor we've got. And secondly, even if we don't, there's nobody here. This is 6:30, Kevin. I wandered down there about 5:15, and I met a couple people, and 6:30, I'm the only person in the place. The other two guys left, I'm paying the check. I felt guilty leaving. It's like, I mean, I'm like, she says there was a group of people, 20, 25 people, that she works on Wednesday night and Friday. But so on Wednesday night, these people made it a point. They all went out on Wednesday night. You know, just for an hour, hour and a half. There was only, we're here at 10 o'clock getting trashed. She said, but cause I haven't seen any of these people since I came back. Is nobody down here? I mean, you're open up to a ghost town. I mean, you know, there's a few construction workers that come in the afternoon, so, I mean, they might be making a few bucks, but... Because there's still some construction going on down there, which I don't get, but there is. I think they get some of the people that are working at the post office to come over and have a beer after work. But I mean, she says there's everybody I used to know I haven't seen. Because everybody thinks this is open. This isn't open. I mean, David also sent me, it was either David or Paul, one of the two, sent me a thing which I should know because it's in my business, but I didn't. Until when I read it, then I sort of remembered it. But after the 29 crash, you know, the first couple of years, the market made its way pretty much all the way back, Kevin, before it went on some sort of a fool's bounce. I mean, I as I mentioned to Joan yesterday on the show, Joan, I'm more worried now than at any time, because now this 75 days, 90 days has become indeterminate. And there's people that don't want schools open, you know, 5 years from now. And you know what, Kevin? They're holding the day. And I mentioned, on the show, I said, not that it makes any difference what I said on the internet, I said, we're reaching a point where there's 15 million people, 20 million people that have already had the disease, that at least for the next year or two are going to be impervious to it. Well, does that mean every person? No, John, I know somewhere out of the 15 million people, we're going to find five people that get it again. If we checked every year, we're going to find one person who got the flu in October because they're compromised one way or the other, got the same flu back in April. There's always going to be that person, but nobody, I mean, you can't live like that. I said, what about these people? They can teach. Why do they have to wear a mask? Why can't they get to a bar? I mean, you know, 6 months from now, that number is going to be 40 million. And what do we do with them then? Nothing? They still got to stay home? I mean, I don't see any sort of way out of this mentally to you from what I'm hearing and seeing.
Only rational thought would get you out of it now at this point, because between scaring everybody and we've sort of emerged into this have to make sure something never happens mentality.
Yep.
And that's been there over the years. How many times have you seen, you know, especially among politicians, but not only among politicians, about different leaderships, well, we have to craft legislation that is going to make sure this never happens again. You can't. That's an impossible task. It's an impossible standard. And so if that's going to be our standard, if something is never going to happen, well, then we're not going to live. We're just going to be a stupid society.
Well, I mean, I look at the ones that are the easiest to talk about. And again, under no circumstances am I giving any kind of investment advice here to anyone, because I'm just bringing up the question. You looked at the numbers. Was it American or somebody yesterday? And names keep flying by. Somebody has given notice to 25,000 people, and like, was it 30 days? Isn't that the law? You got to let people know 30 days before. So they're laying off like 25% of their workforce. I think it might be American, but it was Delta. It was one of the two. That's why I don't take advice on it. I can't remember which airline it was, because they're flying at 25% of capacity. All right, so Kevin, without even looking at their books, when I used to do this for a living, I'm sitting there saying, okay, they've got X number of planes they have under lease. Even the ones they've retired, probably some of those are still have a few a couple of years of lease left on them. It might be a lower lease because they maybe picked them up used, whatever. But there's still some legitimate lease obligations there. Maybe you can settle, maybe you can't because nobody else is going to lease it somewhere else. So now you maybe can come back, you know, 20% on your leases, maybe. Even that would be a struggle. There might be some of your short-term leasing because things might have been busy before and you've got, you know, 20 planes that are 20 years old that you're on a short-term lease, maybe even month-to-month, you can dump those. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'd have to go through the whole balance sheet to figure it all out. That would be a job for Bob, and we don't have Bob anymore, unfortunately. So somewhere along the line, I look at it and I say, if we're still where we are, you can't lay off 20-25% of your people when it's probably only 10 or 15% of your total cost. Maybe it's more than that. Even if it's 30 or 40% of your total cost, and you're down 75% on your revenue, Kevin, that dog doesn't hunt either. Where are we going here? I mean, if we don't figure out a way to get 50-60% of the people flying again, that's a temporary number. And if the government now says, okay, we gotta float United and Delta to October and turn on the printing press. Oh, October's now become March. Turn on the printing press. I mean, I don't see any way that this doesn't just become like, you know, flushing a toilet and it just goes faster as it goes down. Do you? I mean,
I would sure love to think that there is somebody who is already thinking of what, you know, how we're going to dig out of it, even if it takes 20 years. But I'd be shocked to learn that that's true.
Yeah, and I don't. I mean,
and just to give you an idea of some of the arguments that are out there too, because they're talking about whether they're going to do another stimulus package and how much it's going to be. And the quote I heard from the Speaker Pelosi says, "Well, that's not enough."
Well, my point is, it's never going to be enough.
We're just going to keep piling it on because they'll have to negotiate something.
Well, the thing, one of the hardest things that when I was in grad school, and actually my class with Milton Friedman, he only had a take home and a test, the final. And, of course, I took the second part of a 2-part course, and when I went to see him and I said, can I do that? Because I had done that at Notre Dame with Professor Dinello, I don't know if you remember him at all. He's the only guy who's an emeritus, full professor at Notre Dame. I think he's still alive. Anyway, terrific guy. And it was money and banking. And I said, well, I didn't take the first semester. Can I take the second? It was a grad course. He looks at my record. He says, I'd love to have you in here to see how an undergrad does in grad school. By the way, the first one was all about banking, and the second's going to be all about money supplies, and those kinds of Fed stuff that I'm actually pretty good at. I learned a lot of that first from him, even before I went to the University of Chicago. And he did. He separated. There was one question. Milton Friedman, after telling me it was separated, he goes, the final will be on both parts of the, both quarters. And I'm going, oops. Anyway, Kevin, that did not work out so well. Matter of fact, he had a class, University of Chicago had a thing. Do you have anything called a withdrawal?
Yeah. So there's a couple. There's the you get your first week taste of the course and you withdraw without getting billed, and then there's also when you can withdraw without academic penalty, but you still have to pay the tuition.
Theirs was if you saw the midterm or something, you could said, look, I'm going to flunk this. You could withdraw and get like half your money back or something. Anyway, it was the only class that I in the economic school that was in kind of an auditorium, but the auditorium only had about 90 seats. It was pretty full. But they used to have people there. People would audit a course before they would take it. So they'd take it like the second time for a grade. It was something we never saw at Notre Dame. And you never saw in the business school either. Business school people just wanted in and out. So there's like 70, 80 people there every class. I show up for the final. Kevin, there can't be 15 people there. And I'm going, this is just not a really good idea, Chief. How did you screw this one up so bad? He's grading like the 15 midterms he's got during the final. He had this big red pen and he's like slicing the red through everybody's paper. I mean, I kept thinking, oops, that one's mine. Oops. Anyway, long story short, too late. But his main thing was when you did an analysis, you always did what they call a stock and flow analysis, which I haven't heard that name since he left. Right now, what we've been talking about, okay, there's the picture right now. There's a snapshot of the economy. And if you look at all the numbers, especially with the money that the Fed has put in, the numbers aren't bad. So on a stock analysis, we're saying, okay, for the time being, we've propped things up. And if all the other stuff that we think is happening, people are actually going back to work, doing stuff, people are starting to fly again. By the way, the universities are going to open in a month, and schools are going to open. We probably have done, on a stock analysis, actually a very good job, Kevin. A very good job. If we continue to let it slide, the flow side of the analysis is horse bleep right now. Because it's showing almost a bigger drain than in May or April and May. So the stock side, which is what you hear on TV when people see a number, that part's fine. The flow side is going down the toilet, in my opinion. I mean, you understand where I'm coming from on this at all? You probably do.
Yeah, I do.
And but we never get the flow side. Are we improving enough to where what we did in April and May is not needed again? And the answer from Pelosi and from Joan Esposito yesterday, are we going to get another stimulus check? The answer is no. Matter of fact, we could be going faster down the rat hole, which is not what anybody anticipated in April. I don't think. Did you?
15 days to flatten the curve, Tom.
Yeah, 15 days to flatten the curve. And now, you know, now it's become so political that I don't even, you know, right now we need, I don't even know how to, if you wanted to do it, what would you do, Kevin? I'd grab, if it was me, I would grab three or four people out of Congress, three or four governors who maybe had some sense to them, and there's a few, and I'd go to Camp David for the weekend and say, look, this is what we got. This is where we go. This is the numbers. This is what we're looking at. These are the areas that have toned down. This appears to be the T-cell immunity. We don't know where it's from, but thank God it's here. This seems to be the numbers that are real, not the numbers that are published. I don't see how these people publish these numbers. I was looking at one yesterday. COVID cases confirmed was like 2,000,004. Deaths, like a million or 100-some thousand. And then it was recovered like 170. Kevin, how do you put that number out there when there's 800,000 people missing? If they got it and they're not dead, they got to be recovered, right?
or they have it actively now, which doesn't seem right.
No, it doesn't seem right. So, but I don't know where, you know, this. But the other subject, I was maybe hoping Jan Flanning was going to call in and help out on this because I don't know if we're experts. But when the Fed does come, because we had the big argument yesterday with Manny, when the Fed does come and bail out a state for unemployment or whatever, for the state's share of unemployment, where exactly does that money come from? Is it largesse? Is it out of a rainy day fund pool? Because, I mean, where I'm going with this is, I'll try and be less complicated than it really is, but it's pretty damn complicated. A city, theoretically, because Brandon sent me this yesterday, with the consent of the state can declare bankruptcy. You saw that on a county probably as well. So you saw that in Orange County, right? You saw that with Detroit. New York did too, right? Years and years ago? I believe they did.
I know how Michigan works a little bit. It goes into receivership with the state, and the state then steps in and manages it until it gets back on its feet.
But I think you can avail yourself of the bankruptcy court and the bankruptcy system. So when somebody says a state can't go bankrupt, it doesn't mean they can't go broke. But the bankruptcy system is, I mean, if you or I or PTI or even if your university declared bankruptcy, you would end up in bankruptcy court or these companies that have declared bankruptcy, some of the oil companies. They're still working. They're just saying as of today, that we owe people $5 million and oh, by the way, we got three. So you can be working and still operating, and you're going to walk in and you're going to say, all right, what are we going to do? And the object is to get some people to knock the $5 million down to three in return for something, maybe stock in the place, maybe just, hey, we don't have the money. Do you want something or nothing? And there's a process for that called the bankruptcy system. And there's a bankruptcy court, and the bankruptcy judge is pretty much in charge. And the way it works, me not being an attorney, is he demands or hopes that these people are going to work all this out himself, and he sort of approves it. And that's a very brief determination of that. He'd rather not make these calls all along the way. And that is why, to switch to stocks and jacks, that is why the Dodgers got such a sweetheart deal. Because the family, the guys that were owning it, they were having the big divorce. Well, the guy and lady owner were having a big divorce, and they're getting legal fees out the wazoo, and they were going to go to bankruptcy court because they were running out of money because of the personal money. And Major League Baseball wanted no part of a team being part of the bankruptcy process because now the judge is in charge. Right, Kevin?
So yeah, the judge will award ownership, and there won't be a damn thing that they can do about it.
Right, and they don't want any part of that because it's such a little closed club. So they ended up getting a group together and said, look, we'll pay so much money for the place that we'll stop that from happening, which is what happened, right? And the deal they got back was instead of sharing cable with the rest of the teams for, what, 5 years or something, they got to keep that money to get their money back or some stupid thing. Anyway.
Yeah, and then they went and played hardball to get the sweetest cable deal of all time.
Yeah, well then, what I'm saying is the states could go broke. How they work their way out of it, I've never seen one in our lifetime. But let's just say the federal government helps them out. I have no idea what that check is, Jen. I mean, Kevin. Is it something they get out of a? I mean, because the president really can't just write a check. Does the Treasury have some sort of a? Is it a loan? I guess they can make a loan. The Fed can.
They can make a loan and. And I would say, okay, you know, it has to be contingent on, as a taxpayer, it has to be contingent on more than being nice to Trump. Although here's where I disagree with Matt is that whether you should be able to do this or not, you really don't be able to get, you know, it's really not smart to give somebody the finger and then say, by the way, can you help me out?
Yeah.
Or to call them whatever name. So yeah, you can say it's the public's money and we have a right. But as a taxpayer, I don't know why I have to. You know, I certainly don't want to bail out the city of Seattle and help them rebuild after they totally told the cops to stand down during the riots, and now they're saying, well, we need help rebuilding. Not my problem. That's your problem.
But how do you give the state of Illinois a loan thinking you get it back?
Well, yeah. So what are you gonna, what are you gonna do? You're gonna say, okay, what are you gonna do with your budget? And that's sort of how Michigan handled its situation with Detroit, with Benton Harbor, even with Flint, where they still had the water mistake. That clearly was, but they were trying to save money. The whole idea is to say, okay, you have to restructure the way you conduct your affairs, and because they're in receivership, the state had to sign off on everything that they did, or they wouldn't get to move ahead. And so, if that's what the state of Illinois wants to do, then let's talk. But the let's talk is going to be there's going to be some pain in the state, and I don't know that that's what Governor Pritzker has in mind.
No, Kevin, thank you very much. But SP Futures up 15, NASDAQ Futures up 100. We come back, we'll have Mr. Wayne Madsen.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? Have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom O. She's AV on the board. SP Futures up 15. She's AV all the time. She just happens to be AV on the board today. SP Futures up 16. NASDAQ Futures up 98. We're trying to make up for yesterday's down move. I tell you what, I talk about not giving trading advice. I sure wish the last 100 days we were down, I would have bought on the close, because it sure seems like somebody rescues us the next morning every day. Of course, the minute I do it, or told somebody else to do it, it'd be the one day it didn't happen. John, how are you, buddy?
Tom, I'm good. How are you?
We're doing fine. You missed Kevin.
I did catch him, though, so I was listening. So
he might. We should be able to find Wayne here in a few minutes. You can stay on with Wayne for a bit, and that'll be interesting. A very liberal conspiracy theorist and you on the same line at the same time. I was dying to find out from Wayne, if he does call in or we find him, exactly what's going on with this Epstein lady. Because Wayne was the person who, educated me on the Denny Hastert thing, and how his foibles were known to at least a few people in Washington, and you wonder if it was used as something against him in that job. And I just wonder if she survives the next 2 months, which I give about a 50-50 chance at. I can't imagine who's on her list of people she could talk about, Jen. I mean,
oh man. Well, she kind of falls into the same class as Epstein, that they're too big to try in a court of law.
Yeah,
I just don't see any kind of way that the extent of what they may have been involved in could ever be on the evening news night after night without the whole financial political system being in turmoil. So, I don't think that will happen. There'll be some way of, you know, short-circuiting this, or of not bringing her to trial, or some, you know, confession. It won't be fodder for the evening news, or maybe she'll be disappeared or something. It's just too big to be let loose. I really fear Saturday.
John, we have, it appears we have Wayne as well. So this will be fun. Wayne, how are you, bud? We couldn't get you for a second, so John piled in. John is an attorney, friend of mine, and he is an expert on like real estate law and other things. And I was talking to him about what I wanted to talk to you about is this Epstein's girlfriend and how, and I was mentioning that you were the guy who led me, educated me, as my aunt used to say, regarding Epstein in the beginning and how Denny Hastert was seriously compromised because people had essentially the goods on him. What do you think of it? Where's this going to go with this lady? Wayne, do we have you? I don't think we do, AV. Do we have Jan?
I'm here.
Oh, you're here. You're saying, yeah, I can't imagine this being in a federal court where, I mean, who's going to be a witness?
Well, probably half of the people doing the features on the evening news, you know, will be implicated in some way or another as having known her or taken favors from her or something. So all these people are going to either have to recuse themselves or just, you know, go underground. And I don't think the media itself is, you know, because they've done such unbelievable cover-ups for these people, protected them, looked the other way, and you have people like, you know, Sidney McCain saying the same thing. We knew for years what these people were doing. Sidney McCain isn't the only one, and how they're going to explain why they didn't say something sooner, say anything at all, is going to make them look terrible. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people who have a stake in this just going away quietly.
Well, I think where it has to go, and I don't know how you don't have some kind of an investigation, you have to, who is the guy who's now, did he run for president? Who the hell was the district, the state's attorney down, or U.S. attorney down there? They gave the guy the almost the pass in when he went to jail. Gave him the plea deal or something? What was his name?
Oh,
but he's a very well known.
He was the acting attorney general.
Yeah, but he had
told this guy's intelligence, leave him alone.
Yeah, he got the call from somebody. Yeah,
yeah.
And but I mean, he's going to have to fess up on who that was if this thing rolls forward.
Right. Name names and everything else.
What's the Hispanic guy? What tells his name?
Alexander. And it's Acosta or
yeah, yeah,
something.
Yeah, I mean he's a real guy. I mean he's not a schlump at all. I mean, and he's,
oh no,
you know,
no.
I mean
he was told to lay off. You know?
Yeah, and the question is by who?
Well, somebody who had more at stake even than he did.
I mean the balls in the air, the ping pong balls in the air, are the Saudis and the Brits, because allegedly one of the royal family was rumored to be involved. Not one of any ones that we know that married the good-looking ladies. One of the younger ones. I just don't. The idea, Jan, in today's world that you can, I mean, in any kind of world where that you could be doing that stuff and people not finding out. But first of all, why you'd want to do it in the first place? It's another. Doesn't even go into that. But I mean, essentially, how long did this? It was a ring where people came and stayed at a place, and I'm not implicating them. Very close to Trump's place, correct? There were
right.
Some of the people actually stayed at Trump's place, right, while they were participating in this ring. And this guy had a place. Was it a resort, or was it just a big was it a hotel, or what?
It was a resort of some kind, of, you know, private residence that was, you know, like a hotel.
But it was right near Mar-a-Lago, correct?
Right.
And the whole idea was he basically served up underage girls. I don't know if we're talking, 17 or 16 or lower than that. I mean, ugh. But what's underage in Florida? It would be under 18, right? Or is it under 19? I don't even know, but I think it's under 18, probably.
I think it's under 18.
I don't know. I don't think we're talking 17 years and 9 months. I think we're talking, you know, reasonably younger. And guys were flying in from Europe for this, quote, service. I mean, what the hell? I mean, this lady was the one who was the brains behind it, right? Or the organizer, and Epstein was the face man or the handshaker? Isn't that
it looks like her defense is trying to minimize her connections to Epstein.
A
good attorney would try to, but
barely knew the guy, you know.
She sounds like she was responsible for, you know, grooming, raping, you know, herself, some of these victims. That's what some of the victims' statements say. So she's part and parcel of this. She was procuring people and then preparing
preparing them for a life with Epstein.
I don't even want
to... how to keep him interested, what to do with children after pregnancies that occurred because of him. She was advising them, telling them, kind of controlling their lives. So this is huge implications for so many people who would have known about this, could have known about this, could have done something about it. And clearly were either on the dole not to or were too clueless to be in the jobs they held. So
there had to be so much money involved. So much money
involved. Oh, my God, Tom. Yeah, it's just... I think we have no idea. National economies rise or fall on this kind of stuff. I think there's a lot of...
Well, I mean, if you have...
completely propped up by
it. The Saudis have this very... I don't know how to describe the place. I've never been there, but it's... I mean, you can't, you got to wear the face the head thing. You can't drink, right?
Right.
You can't, you're not supposed to, I guess the guys can walk out on the women, but the women can't walk out on the guy. I don't know what the, but it's very repressive. And if you steal something out of somebody's car, second time they hack your hand off or something, or some bizarre, it's very serious Muslim law. And, now the idea that, some of your big shot princes leave the country, drink and eat shrimp cocktails and avail themselves underage women for the weekend would not go over well. I don't believe in Saudi. It shouldn't go over well anywhere, but even there, I don't think that makes you a hero. Just saying.
Not
to mention you probably use
people. You're on the edge of all of their cultures and legal systems. In any country, this is the kind of stuff that there's tremendous power and money that's behind letting it exist and flourish. And on the surface, there's no government that I can think of that would condone this or subsidize it. And yet what's really happened is that the people at the top of these governments, I think, are primarily beneficiaries of this whole scheme. And they've got, their own reputations at stake and risk being compromised completely if this thing percolates too long in the news. So you've got... national security issues that you wouldn't think would have much to do with a sex scandal, but that's always been the sex scandals that have gotten the most legs, the ones that involve national security, that involve compromising high officials. Think of the Profumo scandal in England, and that has tremendous power to implicate a whole group of politicians who really can't sustain that kind of scrutiny.
Well, Jan, as you know, I've always been a pretty reasonable live and let live, not really a law and order dude. I mean, if somebody, in Mount Greenwood Park, we never did it because we always had a place to go. But, if somebody wants to bring out after triple headers and have a beer in the sixth inning of the third game, even though the park doesn't want beer in there, I don't want the police throwing them in jail. I mean, I'm willing to let a lot of things slide, right? But the idea of people in power... And to me, it's a question of judgment. I mean, do I really want a senator while he's in that job or a prince or somebody taking a government jet across the world to essentially, make love to a 15-year-old or worse? I can't even imagine at 15, you and I were, we were probably freshmen in high school. Trying to keep quiet so the brother didn't yell at you. Trying to learn history and algebra. The idea of you're learning how to satisfy some 40-year-old fat guy from somewhere. I mean, I can't even the thought of.
I laugh. There's nothing to laugh about it.
No, I mean, it was laughable for us. But I mean, I can't imagine, the girls I knew at that age being forced to do stuff like this. I can't. What does that training even entail? I mean, I don't. And yet, these are people now in positions of responsibility that they're making decisions on other stuff. How can you walk out of that with that such a horrible decision on a weekend and then all of a sudden turn around and make good decisions on government policy someplace?
Check your ethics, and where do you retrieve them when you begin to function as a public official again? What bag are you carrying around all the time? It's horrific.
But I was never one of those that if 30 years ago, if somebody had a Playboy sent to their house, I didn't think they were a pervert. I mean, I never did. I mean, I don't know where the line necessarily is. But there was a time when if you were a big shot and you weren't one of the Playboy interviewees, you weren't a big shot.
Right.
Jimmy, it was a place where it was a very candid interview, some places like Carter and people like that. I mean, everybody was in there. There was a line to get in there. But that doesn't mean you ever felt that people should be, especially at a young age, any problem with them. How do people keep this quiet and at the same time turn around and yell at somebody for, throwing a cigarette butt out their car window? It is stunning to me. And if you like some of these politicians enough, you're willing to put off. Now, I also understand in times of warfare, or sometimes, did I really care I think Montgomery, not Montgomery, who was our guy, Omar Bradley, was as straight as an arrow. But if he wasn't, and him being there got 15,000 guys back in one piece that wouldn't have been if some other guy was there, we're going to go with stuff that's talent. Like Mike Rako said, he would put, it was one of his best columns ever. He took his 10 baseball players that had all kinds of issues, shall we say, and he said he would play against anybody else's 10 and he would win. and he had Ty Cobb, Babe Ruth, Hack Wilson out there. Hack was always boozing and Ty Cobb hated everybody. He said, he listed his 10 and he goes, we had a couple of pitchers on there. He goes, I'll challenge anybody to get your 10. I'll put money on my guys. so it's not like, you have to be perfect to be talented, but there is a limit there. We're in peacetime. We don't need politicians heading to Florida messing around with 15-year-old girls on our dime. I just say that. You can be replaced. You're not Omar Bradley. Sorry. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But I don't know if it's come up on your show with other guests, Tom, but you may have heard about the whole scandal pointing to Wayfair, the online purveyor of household goods, furniture. I don't know if anybody's talked about it yet, but it's recently surfaced that people searching for storage cabinets on Wayfair online come up with models, like armoire cabinets, buffet kind of things that you would see on IKEA's website or any number of household furniture places, that these models have names like of models assigned to them, and they are children's names or girls' names, in many cases involving actual names of children who have been reported missing in the last year, and that the prices for these things online are like $23,999 for this cabinet.
Really? I did see something about that.
It's somebody start poking around, taking screenshots of it, and say, "Well, this can't be right. Why would you pay $23,000 for, plywood construction in anything?" And the supposition is that this is just—it's either a combination or solo instances of child trafficking where you're bidding for a child, but it's being masked as if you're buying a piece of furniture. Or it probably is more likely a money laundering scheme where you've got people buying money through a site and the money is going for other purposes, and this is just a way of blocking the apparent path that the money is taking. Wayfair immediately denied that they are involved in child trafficking, and they said these prices were all legitimate, but they also took down all these items on their website. So it may be a situation where they have been hacked, or that somebody has just figured out how they can do this. And if you're dealing with a coterie of people who are already connected in some way through whatever dirt they have on each other, they know to go to these places, and they don't arouse suspicion. The average person might never even stumble upon it. But when somebody does stumble upon it, it's pretty hard to explain what the heck's going on here. And I suspect there's lots of things like this that are out there in plain sight.
Well, you're aware, and the listeners are aware, that, talk about a piece of history, is that every piece of mail from the U.S. to Europe, I don't know when it started. I don't know if it started before the war or certainly during World War II. The planes couldn't make it all the way anyway, so they all stopped in Bermuda. And all the mail was offloaded and every letter was opened. And they had a group, they had a couple of hundred, mostly young women, guys were fighting, that was their job. They would steam the letter open somehow, read the letter, and then put it back together where you couldn't even, I can't even imagine somebody doing that with those old letters. You had to lick the darn thing, those old envelopes, but they were able to make it look like it was never opened. And what they were looking for were like, they used to be, was it ink blots, right? Or the periods? You put a magnifying glass on the period and you could read?
Right.
How'd you shrink? I could understand how it was done, would put a big magnifying glass on how you could read it. But how'd you shrink it in the first place? You have any idea?
It had to have been done through some kind of a photo reduction thing, like with V-mail. Have you ever seen like old V-mail letters where you would go in and write out a letter in, you know, regular handwriting? But then the thing was photographed and reduced to an extremely small size. And that's the way it would be then printed and mailed to the person in service. And you could communicate via V-mail. It was cheaper. But it involved reducing something by photographing it to a substantially smaller size than the original. Nothing like a dot on a maybe in a, like a punctuation mark or something. But certainly there was mainstream use of that, just to conserve paper and everything else. So, but I think there's probably a lot more sophistication to it than what the average person who was sending a V-mail, you know.
Well, you know what they would do and how they would find them? Is sort of like what you're talking about. You look at the Wayfair and you say, wait a minute, why is this cabinet $23,000? Which causes you, there's like a common sense review that I hope these places like Wayfair and Craigslist and those places do. There's a common sense review that you need to know your product, and if one is too high, something's going on here, right? Or
right.
Something. And what they would do is the ladies would, I say ladies because they were all ladies. The ladies would read the letter. Because if it was a German spy over here, the chances are he wrote a horse bleep letter. It didn't make any sense. Because it wasn't like English was a second language. That's when they would knew, because you couldn't inspect every punctuation mark in every letter. So they'd quick read the letter, and then if the letter was like, why would anybody write that to somebody? Then they'd start looking over the rest of the thing. And it's always, the disguising part is the hard part.
Right.
No matter what kind of what you do. But yeah, I don't. I mean, this you see this stuff going on, Jenny, and you wonder how many people know. You hear, there's these once in a while we get one of these right wing camps someplace, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. And you're like, how does somebody not know that there's like people up here that you never see? I mean, it doesn't arouse anybody's suspicion, or even in the city, where why are all those young people going in that building? I mean, in my neighborhood, they used to have a place where. Even me, the old dumb fart. I mean, I'm sitting on my porch with my dog Scruff, and I see a bunch of young people wandering around, and like yeah, that's like kind of a lot of young people from the neighborhood. And all of a sudden, they all start marching down the alley. Well, this one guy was having these rave parties. As soon as everybody gets the signal, everybody walk in. But it's not like you can do it without anybody noticing. I don't know what to do about it. I don't think there's anything wrong with them, so you're not going to call the police or anything. But clearly, if you got your eyes open, you sort of see it, you know, right? I mean,
oh, sure. And that, you know, if initially, I mean, places like Craigslist and Backpage, you know, before they were shut down or more intensely supervised and controlled, were places that child traffickers could kind of hang out with impunity. And you know, until somebody actually started following some of these, you know, threads and looking at the kind of stuff that was being advertised. And the patterns that were emerging, and of course, you know, as those things have become harder to subvert for criminal purposes, it kind of stands to reason that you would go to something like Wayfair or some other internet business and subvert it. And people in the know all know about it. The average person has no clue what's going on, and eventually that will have to be, you know, squashed, and they'll have to like rehabilitate their image, but it will go somewhere else, and it will have to have some kind of currency in the public imagination so that people from all over can access it, but only certain people really know what to look for.
Well, it's always been. What was the movie where when the wasn't the sting, but it was something when the robbery was on, somebody put an ad in the classifieds for a bicycle or something or whatever, and they saw the ad for the, you know, the certain size Schwinn bike, they knew the deal was in?
Oh, yeah. And the Thomas Crown Affair has that thing where they put an ad in the paper, and they're trolling. You know, they're looking for people who are kind of not maybe aware of what they're responding to. They think they're, you know, it's deceptive in a good way to kind of lure people out of their secrecy.
What was the, see if you can remember, I don't know if I can, what was the thing on the radio in The Longest Day that the invasion was on?
Oh.
Was it Papa Had a Gray Mustache or something?
Right.
Yeah. AV, they have all this different stuff from like Radio Free Europe, where England was, where the code was it Papa had a long mustache or a gray mustache or something. All of a sudden these guys are, hey, the invasion's tomorrow. They all spring into action. But, I mean, it's not like this is unusual. I mean, people have done this for like a long time. But anyway.
Well, and this is what really broke the whole Pizzagate story 4 years ago and has kept it alive, is that there's no way the word pizza in these leaked emails from the Podestas could make any sense at all unless you put it into some kind of a trafficking scenario. And then it makes a lot of sense. So once you crack the code, I mean, that story comes and goes, but that to me is all tied in with this Epstein stuff and everything else. And as one goes, so the others go too. And nobody really, I think, has any sense of just how deep this stuff can run.
Well, somebody, my concern, I mean, with the Denny Hastert story, my concern is we got to go to break here in a second, Jen, and we'll maybe grab Wayne for the second half hour. But the it's all about control. I mean, I guess I care that Denny Hastert was doing stuff as a wrestling coach, but it's years and years later, and he's in Washington, and he's a, you know, I thought he was a pretty bright politician, seemed like a decent enough guy. Of course, you didn't know his history, and but somebody knew, and people got out of the way, and all of a sudden he gets this job. And other people that you and I think might be pretty straight people, all of a sudden can't get anywhere. Somebody asked me a question yesterday. It was I don't know what show I was on. I said, what happened to the guy from Starbucks? Wasn't he running for president? What the hell happened to him? Who got to him and said, don't even try this? I mean, somehow, some way, that guy was dissuaded in what, about 2 weeks?
Certainly. And remember Barney Frank. I mean, Barney Frank was doing this while he was a congressman. You know, a call boy service running out of his townhouse in Washington. I can't believe Barney Frank was the only one who knew he was doing that.
No, but I mean,
sure.
they're
in New York, you know, contingent knew about it, and probably everybody above a certain level in Congress knew about it too. Did anybody say anything, or did anybody horrified about it? Not at all.
Well, not saying anything is one thing. Controlling him because of it's another. Who's the guy doing the controlling?
Right.
SP Futures up 20, NASDAQ Futures up 197. Getting back to about all yesterday. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. She's AV on the board. Working hard today. All kinds of people calling in. S&P futures up 21 now. NASDAQ futures 111. So I think we've run past the down day yesterday. Dow futures down up 152. Let's check that for sure, however. We're only down 10 in the S&P yesterday. Down 135 in the Dow Jones and down 76 in NASDAQ. So buy the dip. Buy the dip. That's the mentality. DAX up 57.4%. FTSE up 40.6%. CAC around down 4. They're the only outlier there, but it's less than 0.1%. Bonds going the other way here, even though the market looks positive. 0.60 in a 10-year. The bond minus 0.47. Japan hanging positive plus 0.01. Oil down 16 cents, 40.59. Brent down 23 cents, 43.14. Natural gas down a penny, 170. RBOB, 122. Gold is now up almost $9, 8.89. Silver up a penny, so in copper, 290, it's unchanged on the day. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, still messing around with the Dan Ryan, huh?
Yes, still a lot of delays, and it's already known that we have two dead and a baby critically injured. So three separate crashes from overnight, blocking all outbound lanes from 71st to 95th Street.
Did the first crash cause all these other crashes? It sounds like it.
There's not much details on that yet, but it's still a lot of solid traffic.
Well, when you pile into when you run into a accident scene 110 miles an hour, a lot of bad stuff can happen, just saying.
Exactly. Yeah, other than that, the traffic is clear in Chicago, and the weather is beautiful today, sunny and clear skies. The highest of the day will be 87 and the low is 74. Clear skies at night as well, no precipitation. And sunny and dry in Phoenix today. 108 degree is the highest of the day, and the lowest will be 87. Back to you, Chief.
Still no Wayne?
No Wayne. I don't know. He called me before, and then he disappeared, which is so strange. I was excited to hear about conspiracy theories.
Well, give him another shot in a minute. Maybe
now
maybe
it's more about the sex scandal and gossip.
Well, it's sort of the same thing. That's we're gonna trying to get his feel on it because he. John, you're still with us, I hope?
Still here, Tom.
Yeah, because Wayne has been around Washington. He was in he worked for NSA, like during the Nixon administration. So he kind of knows where a lot of the scalps are buried and the people doing different stuff. And, I'll bet there's some conspiracy afoot this morning. That's why, probably why he's not on the one, but I don't, you know, John, we seem to have, I don't know how we get out of this, know, for me, it's when you have people involved in government, and there's been a tone change. You know, and whether you like him or don't like him, we've gone through a series of what I call celebrity sort of presidents and governors and so forth. I mean, we had the wrestler guy. I think did a pretty good job, but it doesn't mean you're a dope if you're a wrestler. I mean, it's not. My point is, we're getting to the point where you would never, if you put his resume on the wall, would think that you would have Trump as a president. You probably wouldn't have with. Obama was young, but he didn't have anywhere near the experience in the world as John Kennedy did, I don't think.
No. I think Reagan signified the big sea change. I mean, Reagan had, when he broke into politics in California, and he had been in the Screen Actors Guild and had clearly had some, you know, backing among important people in California. But at the time, I remember people kind of laughing at the thought of him being governor. And they were the same ones still laughing when, you know, he was running for the presidency a couple of times. And now that doesn't look that strange in retrospect. I mean, that began a kind of, you know, pattern of presidents who really didn't have traditional political chops or background or mentoring or anything else. They came kind of out of the blue from professions that you wouldn't think prepared you for the presidency. And the flip side of that is people like the Bushes, who were, you know, complete insiders, you know, from CIA connections and, you know, state governments going way back and intermarriages and it all, just a classic kind of political, you know, career that you see not just in the United States now, but elsewhere, all over the world, kind of in the classic mode, which is also fraught with problems too. So I think Trump is a you know, successor to the Reagan phenomenon. He's, you know, pretty much a media television personality in that same mold as Reagan. And I don't know where the next, you know, pattern or template will come from, but I suspect we don't even know yet just where it will go. And people today would be appalled to think that it could go in that direction too. But I'm sure it will eventually, the way we're going.
Well, there's a certain, I don't know how you can even explain it, John. I'll give it a stab. You and I have been involved in, you know, in a lot of education, you know, during our life. You've been a teacher, and I have an advantage. We have Wayne.
Yes, I'm here.
God's sake! We thought maybe you were incarcerated or something.
incarceration have been greatly.
Well, you're going to have to move somewhere else. We can't hear you at all. That's probably why we're having trouble.
Can you hear me now?
There, that's better.
Okay.
We can put you on the commercial. We were talking about two things. We were talking about your quotes when you weren't here. So hope I was anxious to get, and John Flanagan is a gentleman on with you, a friend of mine from college, and he's a real estate attorney and other things, and just a all-around well-read guy, sort of like you in a lot of ways. Scary as that may seem, we were talking a little bit about the Epstein's girlfriend situation, and then we've kind of morphed into the qualities for people to be president. Let's stick on that one for a minute, and maybe we'll go back to the other one to get your thoughts. But it seems like, one of the guys in the office here keeps saying it's the continual dumbing down of America. I mean, I would never think that somebody would be qualified for some of these political jobs, you know, president, governor, mayor, whatever, unless they have at least an awful lot of experience in government and a lot of whatever, just something that special, something where every time at even every level of government you even if you were in the House, you became a committee chairman early, or you were known by people as somebody who worked hard on committees and came up with a few ideas, and you set yourself apart. I mean, even Mike Quigley, I'm not so sure I'm a massive fan, but at a very young age, he's on the double secret, you know, covert military committee that clearly his peers much think he's slightly above the rest. Now, whether he is or he isn't, I don't know, but I mean, he seems to have, in my way of looking at things, have moved ahead and taken some tough jobs. But most people know, I don't know. I mean, I say most people. It's always a horrible thing to say. There's a dumbing down going that, yeah, I could be president, or I could be quarterback, or I could be something. No, you can't. I could be Tiger Woods. No, I can't. I mean, come on. We're not even close. I mean, we talk about presidents. We're talking about Mark Cuban. You know, we're talking about the guy from Starbucks, who's actually a pretty brilliant guy. He lasted about a week, and who got to him? Somebody got to him. And somehow or another, you would never dream that Trump, whether you like him or don't, he has some good things about him. And John brought back the Ronald Reagan phenomenon. My mother said she and her sister were 9 months apart. So she goes, when I grew up, I always thought Errol Flynn was hot, and she liked Ronald Reagan. She goes, I think she liked him on a pinup poster. I'm not so sure she would like him in Oval Office. I mean, what is this? Now you have to be this celebrity person, and I'm kind of leading toward COVID here. There's nothing in anybody's experience that would think that Jay Pritzker, Lori Lightfoot, or Donald Trump, in a real time of crisis, are going to come up with the right decision. They have no, you hope they would, but they have no history of that, of any kind. That you would say, gee, this guy's company, you know, an asteroid hit this one building, or even I'm not a favorite fan of his, but the guy who ran for president last time and lost, the guy who did the Olympic stuff. The Mormon dude.
Romney.
Yeah, Romney. I mean, here's a guy, at least he piled into an Olympics that was a hurricane disaster and managed to pull the thing off, make it. I mean, at least you could point to a couple of projects that the guy, like, was better than anybody else on the scene. It doesn't surprise me that Jay Pritzker, he can make a decision, doesn't even realize 4 days later the decision was no good. And Trump, I mean, he's abdicating on the COVID thing now. Lori Lightfoot, she's so anxious to have people, her to be a dictator, that I don't know. I mean, is our next president going to be Mark Cuban? Is it going to be Oprah? I mean, where are we going with this, Wayne? Wait, too long of a question.
Well, I think that what you're saying is, in times of distress, wartime, we look to statesmen. I think the reason Biden's going to win, and he's going to win very handily, is he's viewed as an elder statesman. We wouldn't be the only country in recent history to have put somebody of his age in office. After World War II, of course, Konrad Adenauer, who they called in German Der Alte, the old one, he was in his 80s when he became Chancellor of West Germany. De Gaulle, who was rather elderly, was called on to lead the French Fifth Republic after the Fourth Republic failed. So I'm seeing that sort of trend play out in the election. Hopefully Trump will leave office if he loses. But I've heard a lot of people say, including Biden and Nancy Pelosi, wondering whether he actually will. And a situation like that would really put us into what I would consider to be a banana republic status.
My question regarding Biden, I'm not making a political statement here, but I was on, we have a very interesting guy that comes on. You heard of Luckbox magazine, Wayne? If you haven't, you should check it out, because these guys, they're monthly, but they take an issue and they grab it and they take it right to the thing on China. It should be must read for everybody. I mean, it's pretty scary. The factories and the wages. I mean, they got right into it. But, he asked me the other day, because they also do this thing where you can bet on all the candidates, you know, every day. Anyway, I don't know if he's part of it, but he keeps track of it to see where the trends are going. And he said to me once, "What is the thing that can stop Biden?" And I said, "It's easy, Biden. He's got 2 to 3 months where he's not going to be like an Adenauer or De Gaulle. He's going to be in front of the people every single day. And if he looks like he had a stroke yesterday, like he did in the ad I saw 2 weeks ago, he could end up being the Blair Hall. Had all the money, had everything all set up, and as soon as somebody looked at him, they go, that guy's not going to be governor. I mean, if he doesn't come across as vibrant and something, I don't think you could be the 90-year-old De Gaulle today and just slide in there.
Well, I on these ads, we were warned last year about this capability. These ads can be manipulated, and they're called deep fakes, and we've already seen the Trump people do this by manipulating, video that they splice together with Biden.
Right.
So I think we got to be really careful about some of these ads that are showing up on YouTube and on social media.
Yeah, but I mean, recently, though, I don't think Reagan, for all intents and purposes, was sort of losing it as he entered his second term. Shame, unfortunately, because nobody wants to end up like that. There's no way on earth that if Roosevelt had to be on TV for a month before his fourth election, anybody would have voted for him. I mean, the demands on somebody now for the last at least 45 days of the campaign, I mean, even if you're 70-something, you better be pretty sprightly.
Yeah, I think that I mean, he's got a huge army of seasoned politicos, now including Republicans, any well-known Republican campaign officials are putting out these hard-hitting videos against Trump. I mean, there's three different groups. All of these groups are led by former Republican Party campaign officials, going back to the Reagan campaign. So where is Trump going to go? Well, he's now got Roger Stone, who's got this commutation. He's got him assisting in his campaign. I know Roger Stone. He's as dirty as they come. The first time I met him, somebody that knew him back when he was with the Nixon administration warned me. He said, never have anything to do with this guy, Roger Stone. He's as slimy as they come. How prophetic it was, those words.
Well,
an old friend of mine that worked for the New York Daily News and covered politics in Washington back in the 1950s and 60s.
Well, Wayne, for a bunch of guys, I think like me, that are old Democrats that are now totally lost with the current group, is he going to be strong enough to discipline the lunatic wing of the party and say, that's not us? I mean,
oh, yeah.
You think so?
I think so. excuse me. Biden's been around a long time. When he first went into the Senate, in 1974 or 1975, he was contending with people like Senator McGovern, and he was trying to position himself as a moderate. So this is not Joe Biden's first rodeo.
Okay, one other question for both of you guys, John. Feel free to pile in. We've been talking a lot about the COVID and the economy and so forth, and I think, Wayne, my opinion is, and I think Jan sort of agrees with it, is that when the feds came out with this huge pile of money for people, it actually was put together, I think, pretty well, maybe a little too generous, who knows, but it was on the 75 to 90 to 120 day plan, that we're gonna tide everybody over until 1st of July, 1st of August at the worst, and then the economy is going to pick back up and people are going to be okay. In the meantime, that absolutely has not happened. Now people are like, if I'm not 100% safe, I'm not going back to work. We can't open schools because one 80-year-old professor might get this thing. We're no further along than we were really when they started putting the thing together. Now they're talking about more, but there has to be an attitude, although I'm asking you, is there an attitude in Washington like, wait a minute, we just shot off a full broadside with the battleship, and now we haven't done any good. Now what? Is there some concern out there that things are not piecing themselves back together as quickly as they had planned?
This is part of this between Trump and Fauci and other health officials. The thing about this virus is it's akin to the common cold. Now, you survive the common cold. People are dying from this version. There's never been a vaccine for the common cold. And now I think there's a lot of worry that there won't be a vaccine for this.
Why? Let me ask you a very basic question for you and Jen. Why do we keep, in the world of misinformation, why do we keep calling it a vaccine when all the stuff these people are working on bears no resemblance to a vaccine? It's going to be a flu shot. They're going to find a way to give you something of this current version, and your body is going to develop antibodies, much like a flu shot, so right. when it hits you, it's ready. It's not going to be a measles vaccine or a polio vaccine where you take it once when you're 8 and it's good to go when you're 70. Why do we keep calling it that?
Well, I think to lure people into the comfort zone that we can get to a point eventually. It's just a matter of time when we will be safe forever. But until we reach that point, you know, the lockdown has to continue in some form or another. So the people who are most invested in keeping things shut down for political purposes kind of hold out the vaccine and use that name as if once we get there, we'll be fine. But, of course, there's absolutely no chance of our getting there. So it's just a way of endlessly forestalling the point at which people are going to have to bite the bullet and go back to work and not worry about this as much. So I think that there's political meals to be made out of calling it a vaccine.
Wayne, did you ever think in all your years of hanging around Washington with all the stuff you've seen from Nixon on forward, did you ever think that a virus would be the thing that rips us apart to this extent? Especially one that doesn't even kill most of the people it hits.
Well, I was always concerned about something like that, just like I was concerned about, you know, a nuclear war. Well, fortunately, nuclear war never happened, but this thing did. And I'm looking at events now being canceled into next year.
Yeah.
They just announced the Rose Parade is canceled. The Philadelphia Mummers Parade on New Year's Day is canceled. It looks like the Olympics will not happen next year in Tokyo. I think if you're looking at that type of thing, you're looking at a long-term... Now, I'm saying we now live in the United States of pandemia, because I think this may be the way it's going to be for quite some time.
Well, Wayne, some of the simple stuff. I mean, I'm here in downtown Chicago, and if you haven't been here, it's a death town. I mean, there's nothing here. Nobody's open. No restaurants are open. Buildings are 8%. I mean, at the very least, I mean, earlier in the show, some of the stupid decisions that these people are making, I always thought that the politicians, at the very least, would be able to preserve their money flow. And yet here in Chicago, we're perfectly happy to close a Best Buy and have everybody buy their TVs from Amazon, and they expect to send Best Buy this property tax bill, and they expect it to get paid. I mean, what manner of morons are these people?
Yeah, I don't know how they expect people to survive if this is a long-term pandemic. We see a lot more, and I've written columns on the universal basic income, which has been tried in a few other countries with some success.
Well, I mean,
I think that's the way it's going to be. They're going to be paying people to stay at home, at least not the non-essential people to be working from home.
But Wayne, one of the things that people... I get to be guests on other shows because the one thing I bring up that most people don't is how this money all works. It's one thing if the federal government has the capacity to borrow money from some people, whoever the hell they are, say people that have money, I won't even say the rich, just say people that have money, and then dole it out. But we're way past that. The people in Washington realize that the Fed doesn't have eight arrows left in the bag. They have one arrow. It's called a printing press. I hear fiscal policy, the term, 100 times a day on TV. There is no fiscal policy. Because they're not going to borrow the money from anywhere. If they do, they're going to borrow it in the morning and the Fed's going to buy the paper in the afternoon. Does the average person in Washington realize that there is no fiscal policy here? That there is only one thing they're doing is printing money and sending it to people, hoping it's going to be short term? That's it.
Yeah.
And Tom, it's like what you and Kevin were talking about at the end of the first hour today with the pleas of, you know, mayors in Seattle and Minneapolis to get federal money to fix what was broken during the Memorial Day riots over the George Floyd death. And I just find that, you know, those riots couldn't have happened at a worse time given the emotional tug that people had towards reopening at some point. That took the heart out of a lot of the emotional attraction of getting back to work fast. Now you've got people who don't want to go to central cities for lots of other reasons besides the fact that there's nothing open there. And I think, you know, for those mayors to let that happen and to know that the long-term effect of that would be that even more businesses would never reopen is just shocking to me. And now to ask for a federal bailout for something they could have prevented. It's like this whole thing has just turned into a way of prolonging the agony of people, and we've had it long enough at this point.
Wayne, I have a quick question, because none of us knew the answer, and maybe you don't either. When a state runs out of money, and a bunch of them were going to bounce their retirement checks, and they appeal to the federal government for help, does that come from a rainy day fund? Is that a loan? Does the Fed come and buy a state bond? Where does that money come from? You have any idea?
Oh, I wish I knew. When I'm hearing now that they're working on another package to help the people who are out of work. They're talking in terms of, the Republicans, McConnell wants $1.2 trillion, and Democrats want trillion. A trillion. I mean, I have the same question. Where is this money coming from? And also, Trump says the economy, is doing great. What he's saying is the stock market's doing great, but I'm saying inflation. When I go shopping, meat, milk, and bread that has gone up at least 30%. That's my vantage point down here in Florida, where a lot of people are on fixed income.
Well, real briefly,
getting very angry.
Real briefly, I'll tell you where the money came from. When Mnuchin came out and said he was going to do a $3 trillion package, and the next day the Fed said they're going to expand their balance sheet by $3 trillion, the Treasury went out and borrowed the money, and the Fed went out and bought the paper back. And that's why you see Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and J.P. Morgan having such a great month trading. They're trading for the government. Anybody who's not, doesn't have their nose up that part of the government's behind, is not trading. You're not making money trading just regular old bonds right now. I mean, unless you're doing the government stuff, I think those guys are doing real well. But I mean, it's very simple. Whatever Mnuchin goes out to borrow, the Fed is now printing the money and buying it back. So I think the citizenry would not be happy if they knew the federal government was just printing money and sending it to them. But by doing the two-step process, they maintain that they're borrowing it, only another branch is coming in and buying it back. So it's getting you to the same place. Even Powell's got a $7 trillion balance sheet now. I mean, if you ask him over a beer some night, if he drinks, I don't think he would say, I'm comfortable with like 100 or 200 or 40. There's got to be some number in his mind at which this is it. I mean, I don't think it's right here, but, you got 2 seconds to answer me there.
He probably said we've already exceeded that limit.
He probably would say. Wayne, thank you very much, even though we got you late, buddy.
You bet.
John, thanks for piling in.
Sure.
Hey, V, nice job.
Thank you, Wayne.
S&P futures up 1750. The market likes it. NASDAQ up 107. Back Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.